VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to The Ruck. I'm Owen Slot of The Times. Exciting news. Normally we do this with my regular, quietly spoken dance partner who tap dances daintily through the issues of the day. Instead of the raging polemicist, today we've gone down a different route. We've got in a rugby player instead. But I'm not really sure I can call you that, can I, Will?
Not anymore, no, unfortunately.
We could play a game of body parts with Will Fraser. Which bits haven't been busted? Hip, knee, foot, ankles, left and right, the back. I don't know how many bits of the back have gone. Slip disc, bleed on the spine. Yeah. I did a bit of Googling, but that's just for starters. Except it's not really a game, is it? 2 years ago, when Will Fraser was able to string a sequence of games together for Saracens, he would inevitably be spoken of as the possible next England Open side. He grew up in the Saracens Academy from his early teens with the likes of Owen Farrell, Jamie George, George Cruz, all players who have fulfilled the promise that he always showed. But Will's run of games became shorter and the time in between in rehab even longer. And then finally in August, an email came through from Saracens that Will Fraser had been forced to call it quits. Will, I'm so pleased to have you with us today. Your intro reads too much like an obituary. and I'm not going to do this Ruck special with my head slightly tilted to one side and going, ah. But you are a story of the modern game. And that's the point, and that's why I'm so glad that you're here today.
Thank you. Well, thank you for having me.
So normally you'd have been playing on a weekend, or you'd have been hoping to play on a weekend. So what did you do? Just start off, what did you do this weekend just gone?
So I did go down to watch the boys. It was my first time back at Allianz Park on the other side of the fence, as it were. So it was a bit strange. I kind of walked through the stadium with my head down, just tried to sort of keep myself to myself, and then was up in, saying hello to a few people up in the lounges. And Jim Hamilton now sort of does the emceeing in the corporate lounges, and he spotted me, and Jim being Jim made it public that I was hiding in the corner. But it was good. It was nice to see the boys, and I had a bit of a weird one after, because usually we always used to go back in the changing room, and so I was with Chris Wilde. And he was heading back in, and I sort of stopped in my tracks. He said, "Oh, Will, what are you doing?" I said, "Oh, I'll let you go, and I'll catch you after." He goes, "No, don't be daft. Like, come with. You're still part of the boys." So that was quite nice. But I'd say that introduction is the first time I've actually had someone read back to me the list of ailments. And it,
well, I'm sure I've missed out.
Yeah,
a few bits and pieces.
There are a couple, yeah. But even so, it's quite staggering when you look back at it.
So that game on Saturday was your first time that you've been back since?
Yeah, so I did a bit of radio stuff for the Northampton game, but that was obviously in a different capacity. So I was sort of busy doing all that. But this is the first time I actually went back as a fan.
Now, did you pay for a ticket?
No, I still got a season pass, okay. So it's all right. So because it was August, I was still on the list for everything, so right. I've still got all the goodies for 1 year at least. Yeah.
And that must have been a weird moment when you say you're standing outside the change room, you're not quite sure if you belong or not.
No, very strange. And even when I got in, I kind of, the boys do the tiki-tonga after we won, and I kind of just stayed behind the huddle until some of the boys, Jamie was the one that actually grabbed me and pulled me in. Right. But no, it's just, I suppose it's just all... The last few months has been a lot of first times and new things. It's just getting used to a different routine and sort of a different daily life.
So during the game, we saw Billy Vunipola go off with a knee injury, which can take him out for 4 months, I think.
Yes.
Saracens lost Schaltberger to an injury.
Yeah, it's like shoulder lap.
He's got a shoulder injury, so he's out for a month. Mm. And Michael Rhodes has got shoulder Surgery required on the shoulder, so he's out for 3 months, I think.
Yes, around
so
there. Yeah.
What's the chances of your retirement? of your comeback? I mean, you've that's an entire back row wiped out in the space of a week, isn't it?
Yeah, I should have held on for a few more months.
But again, that's sort of what this is about, or what your story is about. It's the game and how attritional it is, and
it is. I mean, it's every year. You know, it gets more and more physical. Boys are getting bigger and stronger, and I just think, you know, but having said that, you still get these sort of Jackson Rays, Jamie Georges, Owen Farrells, who have all had injuries along the way.
Yeah.
But, you know, on the whole, just really robust guys who can get through 3-4 seasons on the trot without anything, touch wood, too major. And then you get sort of the guys on the other end of the spectrum, myself and a few other guys in the league and at the club. And it's just, you know, part of it's a bit, I think, is a bit of luck. Is and how your body's just made up. But equally, as you say, the game is getting, the boys are getting bigger, boys are getting stronger, and you are seeing now more and more sort of longer term injuries as opposed to just the odd sort of hamstring or calf.
Can you talk us through what sort of led into August and finally, I mean, finally what made that decision that you were going to finish? Because I would sort of watch you. So over the last 2 years, because I remember when Eddie Jones took over, and there was a lot of, you know, who's going to be in the England squad, and you were a name that lots of people were talking about, but you were in and out with injuries a lot.
Yes,
and then sort of since then, it was like, well, maybe if Will got a run of games together, then he might get a look in, and then it sort of became more like, when is he going to get a run of games?
Yeah.
And I just imagine from your point of view, that just the frustration of, I mean, that's 2 years of just not quite being able to do what you wanted to do, and
yeah, massively. I think under Stuart, before Eddie, I missed out on 2 summer tours that I was due to go on because I ended up having surgery back end of the season. Argentina, when the boys went to Australia with the Lions, and I think the New Zealand tour, which was maybe the year after.
Really? And Stuart Langster said you would have been on that tour had you been fit?
Yeah, but Stuart rang me before the New Zealand one and said I had just come back from a foot and ankle surgery and I just hadn't managed to get enough game time, so that was. And then the one before, I tore my lat off the bone, so it was just kind of, I was I think that year I'd done a Saxons, I'd been involved in a few of the Six Nations camps, and then the lat came off, and then that was that summer. So I mean, unfortunately it's kind of been the story of my career a little bit, as you say, has always been, if I'd played then maybe I could have done X, Y and Z. But to be quite honest, when I look back at it now and you get a bit holistic and philosophical about the whole thing, I had an unbelievable career, even without the England stuff. I've won the double. I've played with and against some of the best players in the world. I've made some unbelievable memories with people I love and I care about. So, yes, it would have been amazing to have played for England, and that was always the sort of ultimate goal and dream. But even without doing that, I still feel incredibly privileged to have done what I've done.
Do you have any regrets about the fact that every picture of you with the double team,
it's with the beard,
which was the highlight of your career, I would guess, where you had this most extraordinary beard, which was almost like a dare, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it was a bet. So the short answer to your question is yes, but equally we raised a lot of money for Great Ormond Street with it.
Oh,
that makes
you.
It. Okay. Yeah, so
right.
It was.
We like the beard.
Yeah, it was a bet with a friend. So a very good friend of mine as a kid was in Great Ormond Street, and I'd got a bit lazy with it, and he said, "Are you growing it for any reason?" And I said, "No, I'm just being a bit lazy." And he said, "Well, why don't we make a bet?" And then so you're not allowed to get rid of it or trim it until you score 3 tries, and each week we both donate a certain amount of money and then we put it up and get people to join in. And as it turned out, it couldn't have been written any better. So I scored my first try in the first game of the season.
Yeah.
So we thought, God, this isn't going to last long.
Yeah.
Second try came halfway. I actually dropped the ball over the line against Exeter, which would have been the third. And I didn't score the final one until the Premiership semi-final, which was the penultimate game of the year. So it actually lasted the entire season.
Brilliant.
So yeah, we raised over 10 grand in the end.
But
so
you kept it for the European final.
Yeah, because the boys got really superstitious about it.
Oh, right.
So I scored in the semi and I was in the change room. I was like, right, it's gone, get it off. And then Wiggy actually came up to me and said, there's no way that beard's going, like, you have to keep it for the final now. So I was like, fine. So literally we got in the change room after Premiership final and Skulk Brits is shaving my beard off with a trimmer he'd bought. He'd had it in his bag, I think, for the last 2 months.
Right,
just in case I scored, yeah.
Celebrity beards. That was the
one. I mean, it was. You're right. When I look back at it now, I think you know, hopefully there'll be a lot more to come, but the most successful season the club's had to date. And every picture of me with any form of trophy or medal or celebrating is with that massive beard. So, yeah, it won't be coming back, I can say that much.
You mentioned Richard Wigglesworth just then.
Mm.
So while we're just on this theme of your England career that you never quite got the chance at, the Saracens, your team is packed solid with international players, but there's also quite crammed with players where people are going, why isn't he playing for England? Why isn't he playing?
Yeah.
So Richard Wigglesworth, Alex Goode has got a lot of fans out there.
Yeah.
And Jackson Rae.
Yes.
They could all be in Eddie Jones' England team.
Easily.
Which of those do you think is the hardest done by?
Well, I suppose I'd probably have to say Jackson, because Wiggy and Goody have played for England, and they should equally be there now, but they've been able and they've had that chance to do it. Whereas Jacko, for me, from a club point of view, without him over the last few years, the club wouldn't have done as well as it has. He's just been every single game, 80 minutes, first carry to the last carry, first hit to the last hit, is just one of the hardest men I think I've ever played.
He's got
with
that kind of robustness thing that we were
just
talking about.
Yeah, he's just a dense human. He's just a dense guy. We'll chuck it up all day long for you. Works unbelievably hard. For whatever reason, just hasn't been in favour with Eddie or Stuart. But he's hopefully he'll get some that come in the next few years. But so far, I think he's kind of been robbed of an England career.
Does he know what he's supposed to be doing? I mean,
I don't know. It's hard because.
Do you guys talk about that sort of thing? I mean, do you sit in the changing room going, Jackson, why are you here? You should be in Penny Hill with the rest of them.
Kind of, yeah. It's the last few years, it's always been sort of when the boys have gone away for the autumn or Six Nations, sort of from our group, if you like. Mm. Sort of me and Jacko, the two that, I say me and Jacko. Jacko plays, I tend to be in the gym doing rehab. But we chat about it. And when the selection stuff comes up, and I, you know, he's one of my best mates, so we talk about a lot of stuff. But you just say, have you been told anything or this, that and the other? And he either says yes or no. And then to be honest, we just get on with it because, you know, we're at an incredibly good place in terms of the club. So even when if you've not been picked, it's such a good place to come into that actually you kind of get over it relatively quickly because you've got a job to do at the club and you've got to be there for everyone else. So I think he will have, well, he should have plenty of opportunities to come if he keeps playing.
Is it to an extent a bit of a curse to be in that bracket? I mean, it's a media thing we're talking about. If he wasn't there, then if we weren't talking about him or Chris Ashton a lot, you know, why is he not playing for England?
Yeah,
it's good. Then they would be enjoying their Saracens rugby and not thinking or not being told that that's where your head.
I think they still enjoy it. It's a hard one because obviously being there a little bit myself and having a similar sort of thing. There, to be thought of like that is not, even if you're not being picked, if people are thinking of you in that way, it's obviously a nice thing to have. I'm sure it gives them a bit of confidence that obviously they're doing something right if people are talking about them in that breath. But I think, you know, it's the culture and the group at the club is so strong that actually, regardless of what's going on outside of the club, you know, there's a job to do and you know exactly what you need to do and all that kind of stuff. So it's very easy to fit into the Saracens way, as we call it.
Yeah. So we jumped ahead a bit. So Jackson Rae, you said he's a dense man.
Yes, very dense man. Shedhead, we call him at the club.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he has the robustness that you didn't have.
Yeah.
So. In those last 2 years when you were spending more time in rehab and that, was your mind going at all to how long can I do this for, how many more injuries, or was it always at the next time I'm mended I'll be all right?
Cool. To be honest, it's probably something that's been in the back of my head for probably the last 4 or 5 years that I was playing, really. In terms of, you know, there's I think with what's happened with family stuff off the pitch, there's always that issue of reality, I think, and understanding that actually the rugby career, even if I played to 35, there's actually a lot more life to live after rugby. So I think
we should just explain what you're talking about.
Sorry, yeah, my younger brother Henry Fraser, that I'm sure I don't really need to introduce because
he's more famous than you now.
Oh, he has been since he did by the accident. I have to book in to see him now. That's the problem. I have to ring his PA and say, "Oh, it's right. If I see my little brother today." yeah, so he's obviously with his book now is flying off the shelves, which is great. So,
when he was 17?
17, yeah.
17. He had an accident.
So he was in Portugal with some friends on holiday and ran into the sea, as everyone does, and there was a little, almost like a sandbank.
Yeah, and he dived
and
into
as he's run into the water and dived in, he's just hit the top of his head in the sandbank. And yeah, left him as a quadriplegic. But you would never know that he'd ever had a bad day in his life because he's flying. He's so busy with his artwork, his mouth paints, his book, his public speaking. And as I say, it's, you know, I find out what he's doing through his own social media, which is, I say to him, look, not everyone follows you, Henry, just to see what you do. We do follow other people as well. So if you could ease up a bit on the tweets, that would be...
He's active, isn't he?
He is very active, yeah.
But having that at home, that gave you a bit of perspective on... It's not all about the rugby.
Yeah,
or...
yeah, definitely. And I think I had a very good upbringing as a kid, and sort of that side of it was always there. And I was always, even at school, it was always very much you need to get your exams done and get the results. Yeah. And then that. So it's always sort of been in me. And then obviously with what happened to Henry, kind of hammered it home even more. You know, I was always trying to be quite active in life outside of rugby, whether it was through work experience or... studying or whatever it was, I was trying to do bits and bobs. And actually the work experience I did was quite funny because I sort of took the point of I have no idea what I want to do, so I'll just try as many things as I can. And the chances are there'll probably be things I cross off the list rather than add to it, and they kind of whittle it down. Right, there must be that thing, because I've not tried that yet and I don't like everything else. So so that was good, and it was good to experience that other side of life. And
what is the thing that has made you most definite you're not going to do?
I was never going to do it anyway because I'm not bright enough, but I spent some time at a law firm and just sort of shadowed this guy for a while, and it was an eye-opener. For those 3 days it was great because it was something new for me. I'd not done it before, but yeah, I mean, as I say, I'm nowhere near, even if I wanted to do it, I'm probably not smart enough to do it anyway. So that was crossed off the list very quickly.
But throughout all that, you were still rehabbing, getting through the next injury or the next injury, hoping.
Still hoping. Oh, don't get me wrong. The first prize was always rugby, always.
Yeah.
And I would have played, if I hadn't have been told that I had to retire, there was no decision to be made. If they'd said there was a chance, I'd still be a rugby player now, giving it a go. And that was always, I mean, that was as with everyone, I suppose, that plays professional sport, that was always the dream as a kid, and everything I did in my life was geared towards playing rugby. So, as I say, unless I was categorically told that, I was going to give it a shot for as long as I could.
Well, what are all those weeks and months like when you're going into the club and you're the injured guy and you're going to rehab and you're going to the gym, you're going to the physio?
Yeah.
At any club, at Saracens in particular, you kind of keep your head up, haven't you? You know, it's a cheerful place.
100%.
But do you have? Are you acting, or you know?
No, not at all. The boys have asked me the same thing.
How do you stay positive?
Marcelo Bosch, I spoke to me a few times. Scholar Brits and a few other boys just sort of say, how do you still come in and you're happy and all the rest of it? And it's definitely not an act. A lot of it is because I've been injured so much that I know how to get myself out of it. I think the big difference when boys say I really struggle is because actually they've not had many big injuries, so when they do get a long-term one, it's quite a big hit to them.
They suddenly get their life taken.
And I completely get that, because when I think I had 10 operations whilst I was playing, and the first of them was sort of 16 years old that put me out for a while, so I was quite young and sort of taught myself how to get out of that hole at quite a young age. But then also just you're coming in to do stuff with your best mates at the end of the day. And that was something probably, I don't know, maybe 22, 23 that suddenly dawned on me when I'd had a few, that actually I'm coming in and I'm doing what I love, generally doing it with my best mates. It's my job. And actually, there's not a huge amount I really have to be down about, if I'm being completely honest.
Right.
Obviously, you want to be playing rugby, but when you break it down and you actually think about it in those sort of ways, then What have you? That's why when people ask me now, do you have any regrets, or do you still wish you were playing, all that kind of stuff? Of course, I wish I was playing, but actually, I've had such a good career. I've had an incredible career because mainly I've been at a club that have shown me an insane amount of loyalty and love and respect, and I feel the exact same back to them. Yeah.
So let's just go. You made 85 games at Saracens.
Yeah, I think around there.
Your debut was in 2011. So that, as you say, that's a reasonable.
Yeah,
a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah,
and lots of games.
Mm.
So in August, what was the medical opinion that finally shut the door on it?
So I slipped a disc in my neck sort of halfway through last season, and we were sort of rehabbing it. And we thought it was just a stiff neck, and then I lost all sort of the strength down one side, and so we went for a scan, and it turned out I got a bleed on my spinal cord as well. So it turned out to be a lot more serious than we sort of initially thought, and then it just wouldn't heal up, wouldn't get any better. And then, you know, we had the option of doing a few bits on it, but actually the surgeon just said, look, nothing's going to improve the chance of it getting back. And, you know, if I was going to take a whack on it and get back into sort of contact stuff, then it just wasn't going to work. So at the end of the day, there was no decision to be made. The surgeon sort of said there and then, unfortunately.
And do you remember that meeting that day?
It was brutal. Shed a few tears. It was a difficult one because it had been an ongoing thing for a good few months before then, and we tried a lot of ways to get around it, and nothing was really working. So there's always that thing in the back of your mind that
it might well be.
Yeah, and we've got very good physios and medics and people around the club, and they sort of said, like, look, we have to be prepared for if this is what he thinks. And it was, and then, yeah, I suppose you just deal with it in your own way. I went for a beer in the pub straight after. There's a pub down the road that became sort of mine and the physio's local before every consultation. So we went there and had a pint each and sort of chewed the fat a little bit. But
And then you went home and you were
and I went home
you were an ex-rugby player.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. To be fair, I've got a brilliant girlfriend who was awesome throughout the whole time because I was a bit of a wreck at home. Because I'm very much sort of thing. I like to deal with stuff privately.
Yeah.
And then I deal with it my own way. And once it's done, and I can just crack on. So, that day, that evening was pretty rough. And then it was kind of the phone call to mum and dad and my brothers. And so it was me and Henry, and then we've got two more, four of us.
Yeah.
We're all very close. So it was kind of then telling them, and bless them, they're all, you know, no one really spoke, but it was all very much, right, you've got such a good sort of good route forward, and you're going to be great, and whatever you end up doing, you're going to be brilliant at. So it was all very positive, all very much looking forward, which was helpful.
And how did you communicate it all to the club and, you know, the guys you, as you say, you'd spent days
with? I told sort of the class 08 boys, as we've been called. I told them
the Farrell, before, Jamie George,
Jamie Jackson, George. Yeah.
The guys that you've been with them every day since you were 14, 15?
Yeah, me and Jamie joined the junior academy together. Well, Jamie's actually a young, he played a year up, so right. I was 14, I think he was 13.
Right, okay. So you've been with those boys since
kids, yeah. Yeah. So it's been, I mean, we've gone from school to academy to first team. They've gone on to bigger and better things. And, you know, boys to men, we've shared all that every day together. So, to be honest, the hardest thing about the whole process was coming to grips with the fact that I just wouldn't be seeing them every day. And we've been in the same changing room for like 10 years and there's still no one. I walked in the other week, because I want to see who's taken my spot in the changing room. And they've written on it, Will spot, and they've almost, like, you know, when someone sacrifices the shirt number.
Yeah,
it's kind of been like that. So that was quite, I mean, I don't know how long that will last.
They've retired your spot for the moment.
Yeah, for the moment, until someone comes in and just sort of takes it.
This is the end of part one. We'll be back tomorrow. You can download part two of this interview with Will Fraser on The Ruck tomorrow.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.